Dennis, what have you seen? There's been a tremendous amount of discussion again in CLL about the problems that patients run into with tolerability issues on long-term ibrutinib. What about in Waldenstrom's? What kind of issues come up there?
Well, in Waldenstrom's, usually the treatment, ibrutinib treatment, is well tolerated. The cases of atrial fibrillation are there, but they are not so common. Some patients may have some fatigue, some headaches, but overall, we have had patients who have been on ibrutinib for many years without any negative effect on the quality of life. And I believe with other BTK inhibitors that are being evaluated, and as you know, there are comparative studies that will be reported in the next few months, we will see if there is a further improvement in the safety profile of ibrutinib, which is an overall very safe drug.
So, Steve, one way to get a good conversation going in a meeting is to say, what do you do with a patient who has CLL or you want to give them the patient ibrutinib, but they have a history of atrial fibrillation and on anticoagulation? I don't know if you ever run into this situation with Waldenstrom's, much less common disease, but if you did, what are the options? Would you ever consider, for example, acalabrutinib? What do we know about acalabrutinib?
Well, you know, across the board, I don't think so far the evidence that's been provided shows really any difference in atrial fibrillation risk based on the different BTK inhibitors. I think it's important for all of us to keep in mind that this is a continuum, that the longer a patient is on ibrutinib, you're going to see, you know, an increase in atrial fibrillation. We went actually from 5% with a median follow-up of 19 months on our ibrutinib monotherapy study, and we were at 11% when we were looking at a median follow-up of 48 months. And in fact, that's about the rate that we see in CLL, so it's about, you know, comparable. Now, what is important in Waldenstrom's that's different than CLL is when you see atrial fibrillation, don't necessarily assume it's ibrutinib. Do an echocardiogram or even get a cardiac MRI if the suspicion level is high, because we've seen a lot of cardiac amyloidosis accounting for that atrial fibrillation. And so it should be an alert if you see it to at least do the basic workup and make sure that the patient doesn't have another cause. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that just because the patient does get atrial fibrillation, it's not a cause for abandonment of therapy. In fact, even in the pivotal monotherapy study, almost all the patients who had atrial fibrillation, we were able to continue on with medical management. And that can include, you know, using an antiarrhythmic, referring the patient for cardiac ablation, or just adding on an anticoagulant and monitoring the patient. So in the vast majority of cases, we can continue ibrutinib therapy, much like the experience that's emerged out of the CLL world.
Just want to clarify, though, you said you didn't think there was any difference in potential for atrial fibrillation on the BTK inhibitors. Were you referring to the data in Waldenstrom's or just in general everything?
No, I'm referring to the data we've seen so far in Waldenstrom's. So with the follow-up periods that have been reported on the phase 2 data that have been reported so far, they reflect basically the same level of atrial fibrillation at that moment in time that's been reported. So if you wind back the clock and look at what ibrutinib AFib rates look like at the same time as those other BTK inhibitors, they're no different. Ibrutinib just has a longer track record, a longer, you know, history. And so I think that for us to really know if there's going to be differences, we're going to really need to look at this in the phase 3 data context and look at the same time periods.
That's really interesting. Thanos, what do you do if a patient's already on anticoagulation and you want to use ibrutinib?
Well, this is a good question. If the patient needs to be on anticoagulation, we would like to see whether there is an alternative option. If indeed ibrutinib is the single option for this particular patient, I think we would take the chance and follow the patient closely. We usually want to start at a lower dose and then try to increase it.